Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, and welcome everybody to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Schwinnie Poo, and it's episode 383. I am joined not by my co-host, Stacy, who could not make this extremely important gathering of minds, but I am joined by, you might know him as the man who sat courtside at the Kings game last night and was specifically shouted out by Monica McNutt for his extremely useful reaction to Malik Monk's dastardly attempt at trying to save a ball. But his name is James Marcida. You can follow him on Twitter at the Irishman he. Also the creator of the NBA Injury Report and also perhaps the greatest mind in the history of NBA 2K development. So, James, how are you doing?
That's all true. I'm doing great. Lovely to be here, Schwinn.
It's very humble of you.
I mean, yeah, you know, I tell it like it is, and so do you. And who am I to get in the way of the truth?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that other people, you know, that a lot of us also forget is that you also were the host of the greatest basketball podcasts in the world, in the history of the world at one point.
That's true. Locked On Knicks. Their fans still aren't over the fact that Alex is running it now into the ground.
Alex.
And I, you know, I get it. There's only one me.
Yeah. I mean, you know? Alex is just out there fucking being a loser, fucking just, oh, I wear hats, so I'll do podcasts. Backwards loser.
Yeah. I mean, he just podcasts so he can get tattoo money. That's what it's about for him.
Yeah. You know, he's rocking the flat brims. It's like, come on. Come on, buddy. Take the sticker off, pal.
He's all not right? Wearing the Strickland dad hat. There we go.
All right. Well, before we get started, I do have to make a few announcements. The first thing that Strickland has Instagram. Check that out. At Strick.Atlanta. Instagram posts on content, new content there. Strickland also has a YouTube channel where you may be watching this podcast. If you are not done so already, please hit like, subscribe to the channel. Leave us a comment. That'd be a huge help to us. The Strickland also has merchandise, which you can find on our website at www.thestrick.land. And you can find all kinds of great things there, like t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, water bottles, you name it, we've got it. And finally, the Strickland has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to. There are a number of different tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland, the podcast that I host every Friday. Prize. You also get access to Takes from Robbie's Bozos, our news podcast that is hosted by Andrew Steele, a.k.a. Doug, along with Zach Blatter. And you also get access to the Strickland Discord with the conversation never stops. There are further tiers. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to Strickland Roll, my solo pod, where I rant and rave with the Knicks even more. You also get access to wonderful premium articles by Matthew Miranda, one of the best in the business. And now you also get access to Strictly NFL, which you guessed it, is our NFL podcast that is hosted by Constantine Metchkos. There are further tiers. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits, like listening on pod recordings, merchandise discounts, and even potentially co-hosting the podcast alongside yours truly one day, whether you choose to subscribe or not. None of this would be possible without you. And none of this would be possible without Bet Online. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to Bet Online today to become part of a team. And remember, use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online. The game starts here. We've also got a great new sponsor. I love betting my friends and betting them on anything, sports, games, who's fast. That's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40-plus states. Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo. What could we bet on? Well, I could have bet James yesterday on whether or not he would appear on television. And unfortunately, we did not. But if I had said, James, I don't think you have a face for TV. I don't think they're going to show you. I would have been wrong. I would have just been wrong. And I would have lost that bet. But unfortunately, James did not have the cojones to make that bet with me. So here we are. Use our promo code BelieveKnicks, BLEAV Knicks for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code. Again, it's BelieveKnicks, BLEAV Knicks. Cut, put your money where your mouth is. All right. So you went to this basketball game yesterday, which was a hell of a basketball game, I must say. Knicks win 98-91. Jalen Brunson scores 42 points and 28 shots. I don't even think that really gets to the – doesn't even cut to the fabric of the greatness of his performance. But no, I mean, it was a truly great performance from him, and kind of thought, honestly, that I thought it was the win of the year for the Knicks in a lot of ways. What were your – I mean, that game was super physical. I think that was really apparent to us watching that TV. How did it feel like – I mean, look, you – this isn't even like you were just at the game. You know, you're fucking right there. If anybody knows, I'm not joking. There's a picture I posted because James was quite literally on TV sitting fucking courtside. So he's sitting courtside. So how was that experience? But also how like physical was the, you know, how could you get, did you get a sense of like, holy shit, this is like definitely more physical than any average NBA game?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so first of all, sitting courtside is like, you know, I'm a jaded, crusty old man, and like nothing makes me smile anymore outside of my baby, of course, because I am the world's best father. But like when you sit courtside, I mean, I did it for the first time last year. My company has amazing tickets. It does, so like
you just buy courtside seats because you're
yeah, I need to set the record straight, not balling like that, just barely paying my mortgage and childcare. But do get to sit courtside once a year. There's like no other Knicks fans at my company, so that's like a huge benefit. I just get them now like when they show
lousy
up.
Lousy company to me.
Yeah, it's lousy with people from
rules on the West Coast over there.
There's a lot of West Coast people, and then a lot of computer programmers who are from like all over the world. But those people are not Knicks fans. They're, you know,
there might not even be basketball fans. They're just there for the paycheck.
Well, yeah, there's some of them. No, you know who you are. I'm not going to name you by name.
92K.
Well, it is funny because until I worked here, like I always had a job that I didn't care about at all. And you do, and then it's, but now like I care deeply about it because I'm a huge basketball fan, obviously. But it's funny to see the other people. I'm like, oh, you're me. Like you're me from before when I didn't care about my job like that. But anyway, yeah. So the courtside's amazing. It is funny. Like sometimes you literally, the seats are almost too good. Had my view blocked by the ref a few times. I'm like, move out of my way. Or like someone who's just like standing on the wing and you're trying, even a player, you're like trying to see the game. You're looking around them. But the physicality.
Does it smell really bad?
No smells, actually. I'm always kind of amazed by that. Burke's butt was in my face a couple times inbounding the ball. I welcomed him back to the team. And he kind of like turned around and like gave me a thanks of acknowledgement. I don't think people have been too nice to him. So I said, welcome back, Alec. It's good to have you. And he was like, yeah. He just kind of like gave me a little nod. Physicality, though. I was on the ref's ass all night. You know, I'm here as a guest. These aren't my seats. I'm trying not to like do anything too insane. But they were like, when you're sitting there, like you see the contact so much better than you do on TV. And you hear it too. And they were, everyone was just, it was a really rough physical game. I felt that way last year too. Like the Kings kind of play pretty physically, I feel like. Like Sabonis is a load. He's, if there's one thing that's like, I you know, I don't know, maybe he's overrated or whatever, but like you don't realize how tough he is, like just physically, because he's white until you see him in person. But he, like, he's strong. Like going up, Julius didn't play yesterday, but like last year he did. And I'm like, oh man, this guy like can bang with Randall like pretty effectively. I think he's a little taller, but he's a thick boy. But yeah, I was not a fan of the refereeing last night. I thought they were letting the Kings get away with stuff that they weren't letting the Knicks get away with.
It almost feels like, to what you're talking about with the Kings, it almost feels like because they're a bad defensive team that they let them get away with like more physicality than they would another team. But in general, like, it was a really poorly officiated game as far as I'm concerned. But very specifically, my issue is like, I don't think that they did. I thought they let the Knicks play physically yesterday. That was not my problem with the game. But like, there's a difference between, like, to me, the level of contact they allow the Knicks to get away with and whatever yesterday, I was fine with that. Like, there were some calls where I'm like, oh, that's a bad call. There were some calls where I'm like, can't believe the Knicks got away with that one. So, like, I was like, all right, that's, like, fine. But I just thought the Kings the entire game were allowed to just do way too much. And like very specifically, it just feels like, and this isn't just this Kings game, but like this recent stretch of games, it just feels like every time Brunson's bringing the ball up the floor, these opposing teams are just fucking like all over him. They're like, hitting him. And it's like, and I've talked about this, but it's like, it's fine. So like, I mean, yesterday, I can't believe he only got 4 free throws. That's nuts. And two of them were intentional, right? The two were like literally intentional. One was a tech. One was a tech. The other was an and one. The other one was an and one. They had to call it. Like they could not call it because then it would have been obvious what they were doing. But like, it's not getting, like, I think generally his free throw attempts have been solid, but like there's fouls other than on shot attempts. Like you're allowed to call those too. And actually a lot of those are the ones that, you know, the fear of allowing physicality into the game, right, is that like, well, you're going to like ruin the flow of the game and it's just going to become this defensive shit show. And it's like, look, there is a danger of that. But part of how you combat that is to call stuff early in the game that's like, hey, you can't just, man, like you can't just assault Jalen Brunson when he's bringing the ball up the floor. Like Domantas Sabonis, you cannot fucking molest Isaiah Hartenstein every time he's trying to run a dribble handoff at the top of the key. And I thought those two things were like ridiculous the entire game. But like, I don't know, like aside, like I think those two guys got really a shitty whistle and I thought the Kings got some soft calls, but like, I think you should expect some of that when you're on the road. But I just, I don't know. Like,
it just seemed arbitrary. Like that was the thing that was annoying. Like I didn't understand why a whistle would happen when it did, even though overall, yes, they were like letting them play. And there was a couple, like, and that, it was almost like that flagrant point against Hart, like, Dante went over to explain to the ref right afterwards, and I saw it too. I was yelling at the ref like a Nick had gotten hit in the face like incidentally like two or three times already by then, and they didn't review it to give him a flagrant. I mean, those flagrants are like insane and arbitrary always, so I don't think that was like necessarily against the Knicks or whatever. But they've been doing that with flagrants for years now, where it's just kind of like, all right, we're going to decide this one was a.
It was
a dangerous play or whatever the phrasing is that they use on it.
Well, the weird thing to me was like nobody on the Kings was even asking them to review it. Like literally nobody was like in the ref's face. Keegan Murray got up and was just like grimacing a little bit and then just like was walking to the free throw line. And then Kenny Albert, I mean, obviously you don't know this because you weren't watching it. You were at the game. Sorry. But on the broadcast, Kenny Albert was just like, he's like, I guess they're reviewing it now. So that was definitely an interesting one.
Well, and there was like another one. Like I think this was in the third quarter. Like they were a ball went out of bounds, and like I think it was Alex Len. Is he on the team? Who's their big oaf? Who's
it's Alex Len. Which I can't believe he's still in the fucking league.
It's amazing. I was like, wait, is that Alex Len? I remember you. He just like jumped over Hart's back. He like landed on top of him. Yeah. It's like you can call a loose ball foul. Like you're allowed
Hart went to the ref right after that, right? I think he like went to the ref. And was like,
yeah, like he like landed on his neck with all of his like 7'2" body. It was like
his disgusting European, his disgusting foreign body.
You said what I couldn't. Thank you.
It was just weird. And then there was one in the late in the fourth quarter. So Monk hits that three in the corner to cut the lead to 4, 91-87. But right before that, if you watch it, like, because Burks misses a three, Bogdanović for the first, like, amazingly somehow had gotten inside position, had boxed out. He had the fucking rebound. And I think it was Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes just, like, tackles him. And they don't call it. And, like, you see Bogdanović and Hartenstein just losing their fucking minds. They're like, are you kidding me? Like you have to call that one. That's like, that's not like you're letting them play.
right. Although like, there was a couple times where I don't think Bojan has the most lower body strength. There were a couple times he was in box out position and just got like belly bumped like 5 feet forward by whoever was behind him.
He has a really good aggrieved at the call face.
Yeah, that's that. Eastern Europe.
He looks like it, like his expression is like, how could you do this to me? Like, how could you do this to me?
It looks like someone who's disappointed in their child. It's like, how could you pursue a career in art? Like, we're from whatever war-torn Eastern European country we're from. How could you do this to me?
But yeah, like, I thought, but it was, I mean, again, so you're at this game. Like, what was the, like, because after the game, I don't know if you saw the interview yet that Brunson did with MSG right after, but he, like, went out of his way to kind of be like, this arena's awesome play out. Like, their fans are awesome. Was, like, the atmosphere pretty buzzing yesterday in that game?
It was. I have a hot take that I'm pretty much 99.9% sure that they pump in noise sometimes.
I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Like, there was, like, maybe all teams do this now. I don't know. I don't go to, like, too many games. But, like, there were a couple times where they're like, everyone get loud. And all of a sudden, you're like, whoa, like, turn the volume down a little bit. Like, this is clearly fake. But no,
AC/DC blasting.
Yeah, well, yeah, they start playing music, but then it's like the roar comes in where you're like, all right, this is like coming from like one direction up here in the center of the ceiling. But no, the atmosphere was like intense from the tip off, and like it was actually, I don't know, you know, in the good seats, everyone's life is like, you know, they're all happy, no one's mad. I don't know what it was like in the upper deck, but like there was a lot of friendly like jawing back and forth with like Knicks and Kings fans, and like it was, you know, it was a good time because the Knicks won. But it was the same last year when I went when the Knicks lost. I like their fans, which is kind of a weird thing to say.
No, I mean they've been
generally
through a lot.
Speaking,
they've been through a lot, just like us.
Well, someone explained it to me. Also, it's like that's their only team. Like they like that's like their life.
Yeah, because when it comes losers.
To because they're losers. No, but it was intense, and it was obviously it was close the whole game. I was early on. I was wishing, you know, Julius was there. Just
could have
used
think
a little extra firepower. Those bench units, like people were saying, you know, Bogey and Burks look good, and I guess they were like okay, but I was like white knuckling it for like every bench minute. It really drove home, like I don't see games as much as I used to these days, but like everyone obviously talks about the need for, you know, like a bench point guard to help the offense run, and like, you know, that was like, it's you know, Hart does a decent job, like he does really well for like who he is as a player and like initiating and creating, but like those are some rough, I don't know if they won those minutes or what, but it just felt like it was you know, they were stealing time anytime that those guys were out there and able to like not give up a ton of points.
Yeah, no, they I mean, they actually did end up winning those minutes.
Did they?
Mostly, okay. Yeah, they did. It was surprising, but like, I think, like, you know, like I the way I feel like when I watch them, and I'm like, I can just feel the lack of speed. Like it's just like very slow. The groups are like really slow. They're methodical. They can't get easy buckets. There's no easy buckets to be had. It's all like you've got to work super fucking hard for everything.
They also had Precious on Sabonis. Like Sabonis was playing with the bench, and like that was just, I mean, Precious is playing great, but that's not a good matchup for him.
I mean, Sabonis is strong as hell. So he just was able to kind of like big boy him a few times there. But yeah, I mean, I guess like did you come away from that game feeling any differently about anybody or anything on the Knicks?
That's a good question. I don't think so, really. It kind of just confirmed that. I mean, OG didn't have the best game, but they're, I mean, I was really impressed with the Knicks defense overall. It just felt like they were, I don't know how many steals they had, or it felt like they were constantly tipping balls and disrupting the offense.
Eight steals. They had eight steals and nine blocks yesterday. Pretty great.
Okay. Yeah. It was great watching Hartenstein in person. He had like a couple monster blocks that were like really impressive. And it's funny, like Brunson, I didn't know he had 40 points until I went home, because like you're not looking like the when you're that close, the stats are, you've got to look like straight up at the ceiling to see like who's scoring what. But it was clear he was awesome. I'm like, oh, Brunson's incredible, you know.
Well, you know, if you're not glued to your calculator, you just appreciate the game for what it is. I was pretty impressed with. I thought like Brunson, just the way he started the game, I didn't think he started the game well. He like turned the ball over three times really early. Mm-hmm. It felt like he was getting really flustered with the officiating right from the jump of the game. Yeah. And I don't really know what happened between him going to the bench for the first time and then coming back in the game. But when he came back in, he just came back in and was like, I don't give a shit what you guys are calling or not calling. I'm going to get fucking buckets right now. And I just thought he, and like to the team in general, I think maybe took after that. But like, that was a game where you could have easily seen them kind of lose their way a little bit because they're just getting so frustrated with the officiating. And they didn't, right? Like they stuck in and they stayed focused on the actual game in hand.
And they weren't shooting well to start too. Like that could have got on them. And that was, I was like, oh, here we go again. Cause last year they were like, I think they were coming off like a long winning streak. And then they just, like they'd been playing really well and they missed all these shots. I was like, oh crap.
And Brunson got hurt in that game. Brunson.
Right. Yeah.
So then your hero, RJ Barrett played well in that game. So
look at that efficiency, man. Yeah, I think the Brunson thing was interesting when he came back. I bet Rick was probably yelling at him on the bench, giving him some fatherly tough love. Tired is for the weak, you pussy. And everyone's like, oh, what a beautiful father.
Stop being a fucking bitch. We didn't have this shit in the 90s. Yeah, you guys were all on fucking crack, Dad. You and Anthony Mason were doing lines off a hooker in the bathroom at halftime. Like, what do you? I know that. I know what you're doing.
Power, Mace. Rest in power.
This is the thing I really wanted to know. You know. So you've now been to. Is this your third Knicks Kings game that you've been to?
The second one. The first was last year. Yeah, I saw them play the Warriors in the Chase Center also last year.
So can you describe in detail for our listeners Tom Thibodeau's aura?
You know, like I felt like me and Tom were one, basically. Like I was seeing things through his eyes. You know, it is funny. Like when you watch him on TV, you're like, relax, Tom, like calm down. But every time he was upset, I was right there with him. I was like, no, I see it now. I see it through these courtside goggles and you know what you're doing.
Did you get to hear a couple of, Jesus fucking Christ?
No, unfortunately, because I was on the other side. Like I was like the opposite court from the bench and yeah, it was pretty loud in their stuff. So I didn't really hear anything from the
bench, from Tom, unfortunately.
Me and him were both very mad with that technical foul that wiped out an open
layup. Oh, my God. That was crazy. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah.
Well, and it's especially stupid because they did the right thing initially by letting them, like, play the transition, right? So it's like, okay, I'm going to call this tack on you. I already know this, but I'm not going to fuck over their advantage. And the advantage was about to lead to a layup, and he's like, you know what? Enough.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they do a lot of that stuff. Like, there have been just some insanely late calls the past, like, few years, I feel like, where they just kind of wait until, like, oh, the ball didn't get in, and I see that he's on the ground now. So even though it's, like, 10 seconds after the shot went up and the foul may have happened, I'm going to call it. Like, they do a lot of that kind of, like, retroactive shit. This was kind of the opposite, I guess, of that. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that other than clean it up, refs. Clean it up. I did
drain the swamp.
I did ask what the over was at one point. I gave him the Rudy Gobert money hand gesture.
So and, you asked them what the over was in a 98-91 game.
Yeah, this is earlier in the game. It made a little bit more sense.
How much money do you have on the over, pal? Are you kidding me? You're doing a terrible job if I have money on the over.
But yeah, I like it's funny. I think they get a little confused when there is a away fan in the front row yelling shit at them, like the players and the refs a couple times. Mm-hmm. Gave me like just puzzled looks. They're like, what?
Yeah, you're also with your wife. You're like, are you? She's just like, oh my god, stop please.
Yeah.
How was the food? How was the food? You saw you had
a little. Yeah, you know, I had some prime rib. My wife's was a little overdone, I gotta say. So clean it up, King's Kitchen staff.
Do you want to talk to? Maybe you can just talk to Vivek about that.
I actually did see him. He was there. He was shaking someone's hand who was sitting next to me early on.
Were you sad?
I had a lamb lollipop that was delicious. I had some sushi, some Toro, you know, some tuna belly. It was really good. Nice. It was not sustainably farmed, I'm sure. So they need to clean that up. But tuna's not on the green list. You're not supposed to eat that like that.
How was your old fashioned?
Yeah, definitely had three or four of those. I think I'm holding it in my hand when I'm fending Malik Monk off of my pregnant wife as he came barreling toward us. And yeah, I kind of just do like this karate chop to like move him away.
Basically as he was assaulting her, really. I mean, yes. the league should look into that.
Like right before that play, actually, he did the thing where he like pointed to his eyes and then pointed to my wife and he said, "I'm coming for your pregnant ass." And I was like, that seems, I don't know what that means exactly, but I'm going to keep my
eyes. I'm not sure we want that in our league. Our league.
But yeah, I got to clip that, or if someone, I don't know how to clip stuff. Someone needs to clip the audio of Monica McNutt literally shouting me out. You referenced it in the intro, but I just watched the replay before I got on the pod, and she's like, shout out to the Knicks fan in the front row who definitely does not try to catch Malik Monk, but doesn't try to harm him either. And if you watch the replay, because I'm in just like protect my pregnant wife mode. So I'm like, I sort of just like shove him away instead of like welcoming him into my arms. But like that, who would do that anyway? I don't know. Like, I don't think your instinct is to like bear hug a guy when he's barreling at you. I don't know.
Not only are you the world's best father, but you're also the world's best husband.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
And I think that's really the big takeaway from yesterday's game for me. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you like? All right. So whatever, this game happens. Obviously, the Knicks win.
Yeah.
Now that you've kind of seen how this team has developed, you know, over the course of the season, obviously they make the big trade for OG. They make another trade for Bojan and Burks. And I always feel like getting a chance to see a team live gives you a different experience. Like, not that it changes everything, but it is like a different thing. Did you get there? I'm assuming you got there early because you had like the primo seats and everything. So
Yeah. We got there at like 5:30.
Okay. So like, I mean, so you got a chance to see these guys warm up and everything. Do you feel like, I mean, the way that everything that you've seen out of this team, do you feel like they're operating, they're carrying themselves as a team that believes and should rightfully believe that they are a contender?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like that. They seem to have a really good mix of like, I don't know, like having fun with each other, but not being like unserious losers, because that's a line, right? Like you have to like allow people to like enjoy life, but when it's time to like work, it's time to work. It's like, there was a little bit of like, I saw like Dante was like guarding Precious in warmups and they were like laughing about something. But then
Tibbs went over and was like, "Are you guys fucking smiling?"
He was like, "Knock it off." Which is the way, I don't know. They were always like, I've been to a lot of games where it's like, it almost seems like the guys just like don't even talk to each other if they're like not on the court, you know? Like they go, they sit on the bench and then it's like whatever, they're watching the game together and like maybe they've spent time with each other outside the you know, work, maybe they haven't. But like the Knicks always seemed like they were kind of like strategizing with each other. I mean, the Villanova guys, you did see that a lot. Like Hart and Brunson and DiVincenzo were like just kind of always like talking to each other about things they saw. I don't know if I can say that like, yeah, they carried themselves like they knew they were contenders. But I did like the way they carried themselves. I mean, I do think that they're definitely contenders with everyone healthy. Me and I have this, like, I guess it's, I want to like clarify something that we like thought about in Discord once where I was like, they might need time to gel. It's like when it comes to like their playoff performance, because like everyone was like rightfully bummed by all the injuries. And I kind of had this perspective where even though I do think they are contenders, because this is the first year with this roster, I don't know. There's like a big part of me that like just wouldn't be shocked if they need like a season of like the. I'm very like old school eye test boomer when it comes to like playoffs and like it's a different thing, you know. And like I wouldn't be shocked if they just kind of need to like take a couple lumps with like this group in the playoffs before they really are like, okay, now we're expecting them to win a championship. But obviously, those games with OG and like all their numbers and everything like show that, you know, that's like a, they performed at a best team in the league kind of level. So you have to, you know, respect that. I also think there's a degree to which like that was a new team for other people too. So they hadn't been like fully game planned against. Like, I think there's like a little bit of that where, you know, like what did they go 14-2 in those first games with OG and like whatever pace that is. Like, I don't think they're a 75-win team or whatever necessarily, but yeah, I don't know. Like, but at the same time, like if everyone's healthy and Julius, you know, with all this help.
Oh, is Julius was there, right?
I didn't see him honestly, but I think he was there. Yeah,
yeah.
I was too locked in on the action.
Yeah, you're too focused.
I was diagramming. I was like, come on, that's not how you run a pistol set. You know, I was keeping these guys sharp. set the screen. They gotta believe you're setting the screen.
Yeah, make contact. Don't slip it. Just fucking get on the court during a timeout. Here, right here.
Last year, we got like soft kicked out of the game when it was over. Because my wife like laid down on the court and I was taking pictures of her. We were like, and some woman came over. She's like, absolutely not. You need to leave. Like, you need to go right now. Like, the game was already over.
But why was that like the thing?
I don't know. It's weird because everyone is just standing around and like, yeah, it's a little silly to like, you know, she like laid down and like put her head like on her hand kind of thing, which is, you know, like, I guess you don't want everyone doing that. Maybe they thought we'd start a trend, but yeah, I was a little like, all right, this woman's drunk with power. Like, you know, we didn't do it during the game.
Oh, that's the line? That's the line? Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. I was like, okay, sure. I'll leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to contending, it's like, obviously, without Randall, I don't think there's, like, it is what it is. Like, they can maybe win a playoff series without Randall. But they have no chance of contending without him. And I know that, like, you know, obviously he's had his playoff foibles. But like we need to see if he can do it with this roster, because this is the best roster they've had. Yeah. I think like even yesterday, you could tell OG's shot was like kind of fucked up. You could see him. He didn't trust his elbow. He was short on almost all of his threes. Mm-hmm. He's got to work through that. Obviously, it's like part of the recovery. So I'm not really like, I mean, I'm worried about it insofar as like, I hope it doesn't last long. But
he got the surgery, right? So presumably, right, whatever was in there has been cleaned up, and it's literally just like getting it feeling right. Like I don't right?
Yeah.
Like
it's like you have to strengthen it again and all that stuff, right? So it's right. Like, look, you just got to, he's got to get his numbers up, you know? Got to just get it going.
Those are rookie numbers.
Those are rookie numbers, OG. You got to pump those up, baby. But yeah, like, I think it's hard though, because contending is just like not, I mean, before the season started, I don't think anybody was under the impression that the roster was in a position to contend. It was more like, all right, let's just keep it. Let's maintain kind of where we established ourselves last year, and, you know, and we'll evaluate it. But like, obviously you make the trade for OG, it changes the calculus of the team, because one, I think you don't make that trade unless you think you have the potential to compete. And then obviously, you know, we're 15-2 with him. We had that 13-2 month. When you see that, it has to change the kind of like expectations and standards for what you expect of the team. Now, again, if Randall's hurt, none of this matters. Like, if Randall's hurt, then he's hurt and you're just trying to win a playoff series and that's fine. But like, if Randall comes back, I think they have to hold themselves to a higher standard. And that opens up some interesting like conversations, because, you know, like, if Randall plays like shit, does that mean like you have to, I mean, it's like, are you at the point now where you're like, hey, I understand you fucked up your shoulder pretty bad and whatever, but like, this could be your third time in the playoffs where you're playing like complete shit. Like at some point we need you to just be good. And if you can't show us that, even with mitigating circumstances, we have to kind of make a decision that maybe involves you not being part of this team long-term moving forward. The other part is, you know, we know Tom Thibodeau's in the last year of his contract because the team has become as good as it is, which is a credit to him as well. But like they have more talent, that has to change kind of like what you're hoping and expecting of the team. You know, like what is the expectation for him if this team is healthy? Like, I mean, all of this depends on seeding and matchups and blah blah blah.
Right.
But like, I think it's almost fair to say that if the team is healthy going into the playoffs, assuming, and that includes, you know, the Randall of it all.
Does that not include Mitch to you? I'm just curious.
I think Mitch,
because of how good like Hart, iHeart and Precious have been, is that kind of like not a thing?
Yeah, yeah. Anymore, like or... yeah, I don't think that one matters as much to me. Not because Mitch isn't good, but because it's like,
sure,
that's probably the one position where losing your top end starter doesn't hurt you as much as anything else on this team, right? Like you can't lose Brunson,
sure,
and be the same. You can't lose OG, be the same. Maybe Dante, even then, I think losing Dante would hurt you because then it's like you're starting Hart, which is weird. Yeah. And then obviously Randall, which we have already seen, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't
replace him. Yeah.
So,
all right. That makes sense.
Like, I think the standard almost at that point has to be you have to at least get to the second round. You have 100%. To at least get the second.
Yeah.
And again, like, it depends on seeding and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, do you feel like that's an unfair expectation, or do you think that, and if he fails to meet that, do you think that's a justifiable reason to move on from him as coach? Or do you think he should have enough credit in the bank that you're like, hey, okay, you can use that as a kind of demerit against him. Like, okay, this is a clear fuck up, but you've done enough over the totality of 4 years that we're going to bring you back, whatever. You're going to have to give him an extension if he stays, right? Yeah. 'Cause you can't have him be a lame duck coach with 1 year left on his contract. Even if that means a 1 year extension, you got to give him something. But would you at least give him that one more year in that scenario? Or do you think it's time to move on at that point?
I mean, it would really depend like how it went down. Right. But when you're talking about like what the front office is going to do, I can't imagine that Thibs wouldn't be back next year. And like, they'd have to get like swept in the first round and he like refused to play Brunson for a whole game because he didn't like hustle hard enough during practice or something. Like, you would have to do something so phenomenally stupid while losing in the first round. And if they're healthy, I just don't see that happening. I guess because if they're healthy, you're presuming that they at least have their current roster, then they're adding Julius sometime soon. So like, they're probably not going to fall into like a play-in or like 7-8 seed situation and then have to play like the Celtics or someone like that in the first round, you know. But if, you know, I don't know. It's like Thibs is sort of like the Randall of coaches a little bit. Like, the Knicks are clearly much better off for having him, but it really is like, what is going to happen when the chips are down in the playoffs, or you have to make adjustments, where you have to be smart, where you have to be able to like improvise and change what you're doing if it's not working, not just doggedly stick to it, right? That's the thing that people are worried about with Thibs. So like, I don't know, but he's also like done, like he has changed over time in some ways. He's not the exact same coach he was 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. But overall I would just be shocked if he wasn't back next year, but that would all just depend on what happens in the playoffs. Like, it would have to be something, a tremendous failure for him not to be back. And I just don't see that happening.
Interesting.
You think so? You think it's like kind of, if they lost, I mean, if they lose in the second round, that's a real different conversation.
No, if they lose in the second round, I think like, even if I think, I don't think you can actually fire him if they lose in the second round, just because you can't be like, oh, they like lose. Okay, you get to the second round. Presumably, you're one of your opponents. It'll be one of Boston, Milwaukee, and I don't know. I'm trying to think of who else I would actually. Honestly, that's a, so. This is the problem for me. Those are the only two teams, right? Or maybe the Heat. Okay, so let's say the Heat. Those are the three teams. Let's say those are the three teams you're worried about potentially facing, right? I just think, to me, losing to the Heat again is a fireable offense. If you're healthy, like I genuinely feel that, yeah. Because I thought I would have fired him after that series last year, and I still stand by that. I thought he coached an atrocious series, and I thought he lost like every margin you could win. And you still had a chance to win that series. That to me, that just, and yeah, I understand. Quickly played like shit even when he played. Randall was obviously terrible. Nobody could make a shot in game six. I understand there are mitigating circumstances, but like, look, man, when your entire team's offense, they were the number three offense in the league last year in the regular season. Obviously, the playoffs are different, but when your entire team's offense craters in the playoffs to the degree the Knicks did, to me, that probably speaks to some type of systemic coaching issue. And this has been an issue for his teams throughout his career, is that they drop offensively significantly in the playoffs. Yeah.
That was a little tricky, only because like so much of their offense was, you know, grabbing offensive rebounds, and then you've got Bam in the second round and not those two stick boy weaklings on Cleveland. And you know, Bam's allowed to like rip guys' arms out of their sockets for European. Some reason.
Who may as well be European.
They're honorary Europeans.
I hope everybody listening to this understands this is purely just this is a,
yes.
This is
not all the Europeans we're joking about could grind me into dust if they want to right now. Yeah, but Bam's allowed to like just do whatever he wants and like chop guys' heads off, and it's fine. So, but I mean, to your point, it's like if you are the number three offense, there's probably some pivots that you're not making. I mean, I can't remember it well enough to get into all the tactics, but I think that's reasonable to be like, yes, they should have been able to, you know, figure out a couple things.
And I just.
So what, when would you fire him this year? So you're saying if they lost to Miami.
If they lost to Miami, to me, that's like if they lose to Milwaukee, I still think there's a scenario. Like, I think they're better than Milwaukee, but obviously they have Giannis, right? So there's just right, a scenario sure. where Giannis is like Giannis, and you're like, all right, well, what are we going to do?
Maybe if Dame is saving it a little bit for the playoffs. I don't know if he gets that LeBron benefit of the doubt because he is just old at this point.
Yeah. But. And he's also never been a particularly like, he's had these couple.
Dame awesome time, baby. Moments. He points to his wrist.
His overall playoff resume is actually like pretty bad. Yeah.
But he stared at the camera.
I think if you lose to Milwaukee, you just kind of, right. You have to accept it a little bit. Like, you have to just take that one and go with it. But if you lose, to Boston, Boston is the most talented team in the league, in my opinion. They should at least, at the bare minimum, I think, like, they should win the East. They should be the favorite to win the East anyway. If you lose to them, I think it's no harm, no foul. I actually think the Knicks have a chance to make that at least a competitive series, but we'll see. But to me, Miami's just like, I think we're better than Miami. Like, we're a better team. We have better talent. Yeah. We have good matchups against them. We have better size across the board. Like, to me, that's just a matchup where you have the advantages. Again, all of this is assuming Randall's healthy. And I think Brunson's the best player in that series. So if you're the best player in the series, you have the best talent. To me, not winning a series like that 2 years in a row is a fireable offense.
Do you have a specific thing that you're worried Tibbs will do to screw them over in that series? Like, is there
I think
you're worried he's going to use too much, or is it just a general outfoxing by Spo?
My concern is just like not using, not being willing to play small ever is really my main concern with him.
Yeah.
Because I think with OG and Hart, like especially after having gotten OG, you actually can try Randall at the five lineups. Like, you can try them. There's nothing wrong with that. I understood it a little more previously when we didn't have OG. Like, why you would not? Well, I understood the unwillingness because the general size of the team wasn't there. But now that you have OG, and also like even if you don't want to go five out, you can play Precious at the five. You can have more mobile switchy right. lineup out there. So that's my main concern. And I, it is my main concern. Cause I actually, I forgot who do we play? Not Portland. When we played Philly and, you know, we obviously lose that first game against them. And then we smoked them last time when OG's first game back. But when we, after the game, Tibbs had a, you know, obviously did his press conference. They had a pretty interesting quote, not an interesting quote, but he just kind of like, we all knew the things he cares about, but he like blatantly said it. He was just like, you know, the things you can always do is like, you can always rebound the ball. You can always protect the ball, like not turn it over. And you can always defend well as a team. And I, obviously all that stuff is true. Like, yes, you can always like do those things, but no coach like literally enforces those three beliefs in every single lineup decision he makes right. the way Tom Thibodeau does. And to me, like there's obvious strengths to that because your team has a clear identity and, you know, they know exactly what they are at all times, but there's also some limitations where like, if you're never willing to risk like, okay, maybe this lineup can't rebound at a high level, but they're going to spread the ball out. They're going to spread the floor. And that gives us an advantage a different way. It's that rigidity specifically where it's like every lineup has to meet these three criteria at a high right. enough benchmark for him to be willing to use those lineups. And he's never willing to kind of like rob Peter to pay Paul. Right. Yeah. Which, you know, it's not wrong necessarily. Like I thought it was weird when people were criticizing him for using Jericho Sims in these two center lineups when Randall and OG were out. Cause I'm like, well, I would get that if like Bojan and Burks weren't playing like absolute fucking assholes, but they are. So like he kind of like has to just pick poison. His pick is poison one way or the other. Like, do you want to have bad spacing or do you want to like maybe have right. two guys that are just playing like absolute assholes and giving you nothing on defense? So like it's tough, but that to me is like my main concern against Miami, because the one thing Spoelstra will do is Spoelstra absolutely will, you know, he will be kind of flexible and he'll be tactically flexible and he will, you know, he'll switch things up and he's not, and it's, can Tibbs adjust quick enough and adapt quick enough? And at this point he has we're at full health. He has the options. He has the overall talent. He has the different looks to throw at teams at his disposal. It's about if he's willing to do it or not. And if he's not willing to do it, to me, that's a really big red flag. And that's probably my bigger, like, if you want to say like, you know, there's scenarios in any outcome where you might want to keep him, you might want to fire him. I think the underlying concern I have is like, will he be willing to use those different tactically flexible options?
I'm not even saying that this, I don't think I like believe in this viewpoint of what I'm about to say, but is it possible that with this roster fully healthy, they actually now just have the team that allows him to be insane that way? And because they're almost like the optimal Tibbs roster and he can do that and it's not going to bite them in the ass. Like, cause he was coaching like he coaches during that streak when they were, you know, the best team in the league, right? I know they didn't play everybody, but they had a bunch of wins against like really good teams. I don't remember who some of the, I can't even tell you who any of them were, but there were some good ones. I know that. Do you think is it possible that Leon has Tibbs proofed the roster when healthy?
You know, before Randall got hurt, so the last time we were fully healthy, that was like the first time I had watched a game a little high, in a long time. I just had not watched a game still in a while. And it's like, you know, when you're watching a game and you're like, I see all the angles, like sure. everything makes sense. Everything uh-huh. is perfect. But like you're watching it. And I remember watching it, and I was like, my main takeaway after that game, even after Randall, like, you know, you like Randall got up and it was so weird on the broadcast, or like, I'm not sure what's wrong. I'm like, well, you can see that his shoulder is literally broken. Like, what do you mean you can't see what, like, it's very obvious what's wrong here. But like he, so I just remember watching that and I was like, man, this team is like, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're more athletic. Like they are everything that Tibbs wants in this group, that group of like nine rotation guys he had at the time, which included Grimes in that moment. But like, I always thought Grimes was kind of like the least important part of that group. Deuce, like whatever his flaws are, you can very much see defensively, right? Like he's everything Tibbs gives a shit about. He's strong as hell. He'll guard up, he'll guard down. He's tough. Like everything about this team spoke to that. And like, so to your point about like Tibbs proofing the roster, I mean, I don't know if you can actually Tibbs proof a roster.
Right. I mean,
but in terms of like, if he's ever going to have a group that he is like, this is the group for him. This is the fucking group for him. Like this is a group of players who I think completely fit his ethos. And
can shoot. He has, I mean, I don't think like the shooting's not of that top tier that you talked about of what every lineup must do clearly, but like he does, he has been radicalized. He's taken the red pill on like, all right, threes.
Like, yeah, no, I mean, I think,
you know, probably, he's modernized their shot chart. Like,
he definitely at least just understands like, okay, like whether I care, this is the Popovich thing, right? Remember, you remember Pop always used to bitch about like the importance of the three, now it's ruined the game, but it's like, but like when the Spurs were good and Pop wasn't washed, they were always like leading the league in corner threes and like all this type of stuff that matters. So he could bitch about it, but he understood intrinsically like, okay, I might not like it, but this is the game and this is the math and this is what we need to do. I think Tibbs, it is like, I'm sure Tibbs is probably so fucking happy with the way they're officiating games right now. He's probably just like, this is real fucking ball, dude. This is what it is. This is what it was like in the 90s. But he understands he's not in the 90s. You know what I mean? He understands that.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves a lot of credit for like, because you remember when the Knicks hired him, there was all this idea of like, is he a dinosaur? You know, the Timberwolves.
Well, there's the story about like he went on his like vision quest and he like embedded himself with multiple teams and he figured out that you should shoot three-pointers. Like that was the takeaway. It's like, good. Wow. I'm glad. But he had to go on like an odyssey. He was tempted by the sirens who were like, shoot the mid-range. He's like, no.
that's a red herring.
Yeah.
No, it's, but like, he does deserve a lot of credit for that because there are coaches that haven't adapted in that way. And he was seen as a dinosaur, to be fair. Like, you know, even the stuff with his defensive scheme. You know, I think now, after, what, 3.5, 4 years, no defense in the NBA, the modern NBA, is really perfect. Like, it's impossible with the offensive talent around the league and just the way the rules are designed. And also just, like, you know, teams now, everybody knows what are good shots. So every team is hunting those high-leverage shots. Everything is catered to try and hunt those shots. So, like, it's just really hard to be a good defense. And if you remember, there was this theory, right, of like, oh, like his defense is now outdated and it cannot work. Mm-hmm. And my feeling was more that like, are we going to judge him because he's like the defense with fucking Wiggins and Cat and Jeff Teague and Jamal Crawford wasn't great? Like, right. I don't know. Like maybe that's, and I don't know. You've seen it now for 4 years. There have definitely been times where the Knicks defense hasn't been great. But over those 4 years, I think there's enough evidence to suggest, hey, if he has buy-in from the players and you give him the personnel that you need, that defense can still work. That defense can still work, and it can still work at a high level. And, you know, they were the best defense in the league in the playoffs, I believe, last year. I think we had the number one defensive rating. So, like, I don't know. I think that Tibbs, like, again, he has a roster now that suits all of these things with him. To your point, like he's embraced three-point shooting. He has guys that can shoot threes. He wants to be a great defensive rebounding team. They are a great defensive rebounding team. He wants to be a good offensive rebounding team. They're a good offensive rebounding team. He doesn't want to turn the ball over. They don't turn the ball over. He needs guys that can create in isolations and stuff like that. He has those guys. Like, this is, if there's ever a roster that he has the, you know, that has the mix. And of course, like, to be fair to him, as much as I love Jalen Brunson, as much as you love Jalen Brunson, and how much, as much as I've grown to appreciate Julius Randle and all this stuff, like, I think it's fair to say we don't have a top five player in the league on the roster. So if you feel like that's a prerequisite to winning a title, fair. But I think there's a difference between I expect him to win a title and I expect for him to compete. And I think this roster is good enough where, yeah, maybe you don't expect the title, but if they play Boston in the second round, I don't expect them to win. But if that's like a four-game sweep and it's not close, that would concern me. That's yeah. what I would say about the roster. I think the roster is good enough where they can give anybody a fight. And that includes Boston. That includes Denver. So, and to me, those are the two best teams in the league. So,
well, that was one of that. That was one of the games. I guess they were coming off a back-to-back, but they destroyed Denver when they had OG in that original run, right? Didn't they beat them by like 20-something points? Sorry.
Yes.
I just was excited that my brain still worked a little bit. I'm like, oh, that was a signature win. Still got it.
That was probably the win of the season, right?
I mean, yeah, I think so.
And I guess to me, like, again, last night to me stood out in a different way. But that was the most dominant victory in so many ways, right? Like, it's just when you beat a team as good as Denver in the way they beat them, it just means a lot. And it was eye opening, right? It was kind of like it was a litmus test.
And anyone could have an off night, so maybe Denver wasn't their top, whatever. But like, you know, they didn't seem like they were uniquely fumbling the bag that game. It wasn't like they were dribbling it off their dick all game or anything like that, you know. So I'll give the Knicks credit. I'll be brave enough to do it on this Knicks podcast.
What? What are you brave enough to do?
Give the Knicks credit for beating Denver. I was saying you could argue, you know, that like maybe they didn't have their best game or whatever, Denver, that like it doesn't mean it's just one game, right? So you could be like, well, you know, Denver had an off night, but they didn't seem like they were particularly bad that game. It just seemed like the Knicks took it from them.
Yeah, for sure. Like the Knicks, I mean, you don't win by what it was like. I don't even remember. It was like a 40-point win or something. Like, it was ridiculous with the way they beat Denver. I mean, they crushed them. And so, like, when you crush a team like that, I think it says a lot. And it just – it you can't win by 40 points by accident. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, they got hot from three. Like, oh, really? That's – so you lost by 40 points because they got hot from three? Oh, the refs were against us. Really? So that's – if not for the refs, you would have been – that would have covered the 40 points right there. But yeah, like, I don't know. I just think they've shown enough now where, and honestly, Tibbs has shown enough now. Like, I've seen him adjust in games. I've seen him adapt to different opponents. And, you know, I'm happy they're getting this kind of experience right now with OG, but without Randle, because I think it's important to experiment and understand like the full capability of your roster. And we know, like, with Tibbs, if his roster is fully healthy, he's never going to be like, this is a great this game here, this chance, this is a great opportunity for me to experiment with this thing. He's just going to be like, well, this is the best nine guys I have. We're going to play them against the Detroit Pistons tonight.
And he's also like, you can always do something better, right? So he just wants to like work on perfecting the things that he wants them to do. Like, he's not trying to have the most varied bag. He's just trying to have it be like the most pristine. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah.
He's not worried about pivots. He's worried about like
execution.
Right. He's just like, I don't care about. I think he's one of these.
It's not the scheme. You didn't do it well enough. Like, that's always like it's like kind of the energy he has. I don't know if you would say that, but like, you know, that's. I feel like he's like, kind of said things like that in the past.
He's definitely like a football coach that's just like, I don't care if they have nine men in the box. If we block this up, we can run for 5 yards here. It's like, all right, but like, what if we passed it? I don't care. I don't want to do that.
So he's
we
Dave
could throw
Gettleman.
An interception. We could throw an interception.
He falls in full bloom love with Daniel Jones at the Senior Bowl. Is that the hips?
But I do think like, I don't know. I mean, you were at the game yesterday. You saw it very visibly. The numbers bear it out. The Knicks offense all year has cratered in the minutes that Brunson's not on the floor. Yeah. Even when they had Quick and RJ, those units were better, but they were still not good offensively. Even when they've had Randle on the floor without Brunson, those units haven't been good offensively. And which has gotten me thinking, like, all right, as much as I love this team and I think they are a contender, there's always, you always have to look to add talent. You know what I mean? Like, you can never be like, oh, well, our team is perfect. No need to do anything. Like, you always have to add talent. 2 years ago, the Knicks were obviously heavily in pursuit of Donovan Mitchell. Doesn't happen. He goes to Cleveland. I think the Knicks made the right call then. Think that deal would have been too expensive. But he might be on the market again this summer. And watching this team, and especially those non-Brunson minutes, are illuminating to me. And I want to get your thoughts on this, because one of the main concerns, right, about pairing Brunson and Donovan Mitchell together is like, well, it's a small backcourt. How are you going to match up? Well, the Knicks have done a little bit of a proof of concept of this by starting Dante DiVincenzo at the two.
Yeah.
And since they've gotten OG, they've basically, when they have OG on the floor, even with that small-ass backcourt, they're the best defense in the NBA by, like, far. But it's not close. Yeah. I think I saw a stat today. They have a 91.8 defensive rating when OG's on the floor. And the best defensive rating in the league this year is, like, Minnesota at 108 point something. I can look it up.
Oh, you know what? Sorry to interrupt you, but watching OG play, really, like, being that close to, I was like looking at his face and like, he just seemed smart. Like, I was watching him like process, like on defense, and like the way, like he was like, he seemed like a computer. Like, he was just like, oh, over here, like scanning, like threat detected. Like, he was like, there's some guys you look at them when they're on the court and like, they've got the blank, you know, nothing's going on upstairs vibe. And he just seemed the opposite. Like, it was cool to see that up close. Like, he definitely was like watching the whole court, was not overwhelmed looking ever. He was just like, he just looked so calm and so, like, so smart. I know it's a very like woo woo thing or whatever, but I don't know. Like, I like to, you know, how, like, you meet someone for the first time and before they even open their mouth, sometimes you're like, oh, you're stupid just by the way they look. Like, this was the opposite. I'm like, oh, this guy's like a smart defender. He's not just like toolsy or whatever. Like, he's using his brain out there, which, like, you know, is,
yeah,
no,
no,
not a shock, but like seeing it in person, I was like, oh yeah, like he's all over this. Like,
you can, he like thinks, he also, I mean, he's
thinking not an overthink, you know.
Is this, I don't know if this is noticeable when you're watching him live, but like, is he also just like, he measures it, like, he's like 6'7", he's got a 7 foot wingspan. He looks bigger than that though. Does he, like, does it seem like he's bigger than that when you're watching him?
Yeah, it does. He's a specimen. And he's also just got this, like, speaking of like being smart, he's got this kind of like, you're almost like, is he slow when you watch him? And then you realize he's more like old man playing racquetball, where he's just like, he's not moving if he doesn't have to. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not spastic at all. Like, he's just very smooth. And he's like, okay, I'll go over there if I need to, but like, I'm not going to like Bojan, in contrast, on defense is like doing this weird pitter patter thing with his feet to like prove that he's trying, maybe. And you're like, yo, relax. Like, you don't need to be like dancing around like that. Yes, it's good to move your feet, but yeah, anyway, no wasted motion for OG. Yeah.
No, so what I was going to say is, like, so you did this proof of concept with Dante.
Yeah.
Obviously, the defense is held up, especially with OG on the floor. Like, do you think, given, again, the struggles the team has had offensively without Brunson on the floor and all that stuff, do you think, like, because I'm at the point where it feels like the Knicks are definitely looking to make a big swing this offseason.
Yeah.
It feels like the two names that will be out there, whether they get traded or not, who knows? But the guys that feels like will be floated around are Joel Embiid and Donovan Mitchell. And I know Donovan Mitchell has a knee thing he's dealing with right now, but given all the injury stuff with Embiid, and also just given the kind of like roster construction we have right now, I don't know, man. I really feel like Donovan Mitchell, like, now that we've built out this roster and built the depth out and added these various pieces, I kind of feel like now is actually the right moment to go for Donovan Mitchell versus, you know, a few years ago where it felt like, do we even have enough in place right now to do this? And now I feel like, yeah, I think we do. And now I think we can, and he's also played well defensively in Cleveland alongside another small guard like Garland. So there's a little bit more proof of concept on his end too. I don't know. Like, what do you think about that? Or do you think they don't really need to take a bigger swing?
I'm definitely Mitchell over Embiid. My only Mitchell concern would be like, what would it take to get him? There's always a point at which it's too much. I don't 100% know his like contract. He's a restricted free agent, or is he?
No, he's unrestricted. Up? He's unrestricted.
He's an unrestricted. So they'd have to. Would that be like, how would that be a sign and trade? Would they just have to like dump guys to?
No, I mean, you could just trade him. He's entering the last year of his contract.
Before the contract ends in like July or whatever it is. Or like, yeah, how like do people, I this is the shit that like, well, I don't care at all about as a basketball fan. It's like, I didn't get into it for like, you know, the cap and roster machinations.
So you're like, a casual. You're a casual.
I'm a casual. Yeah. You know, it's like, can you go over your left shoulder fadeaway turnaround? Can you go over your right shoulder fadeaway turnaround? Can you shoot from the mid range? Can you, what is the most common way people would say like he would get here? Like, what would that look like? Do you know? Is that like a thing that's out there?
So I have to look at his number, but his phone number, which I have obviously. Nice. Me and Donovan, you know, we're talking. Should we chat sometimes? So Donovan Mitchell is entering. Let me just check his contract. Blah 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 blah. TheGreatSpotrack.com. All right, so he's under contract for next year at $34.8 million. He's at $32.6 right now. He's a player option in 2025-26 for $37, which seems very unlikely he will take.
So he's under contract next year, and then he's an unrestricted. Okay. I thought it was this offseason. That's why I was confused.
No.
So you're definitely trading for him if you get him. Okay.
And I just feel like, look, I love Mitch, and I love Lamp. Obviously. I love Mitch. Bogdanović exists on this team right now because of his contract. Like,
The Fournier replacement. Yes.
We know this. Mitch and Bogdanović is basically enough money. They obviously, who knows if they want Mitch, but I think you can shop Mitch, get a third team involved, get a contract in there, whatever it is, and send that to Cleveland. Like, to me, that's like the framework right there. Where it's like, all right, these are salaries we're willing to move. Now, however you want to sweeten that, you can sweeten it. Like, for example, okay, I like Deuce. Deuce can go, especially because we know that if you trade for Donovan Mitchell, the backup point guard becomes Donovan Mitchell.
Right.
Like, that's how that works. If Cleveland was like, we don't want Mitchell, we don't want Mitchell Robinson, we want Dante DiVincenzo, I mean, I'm probably willing to do that. Because I'd be like, okay, like, Mitchell is better than Dante, and he can actually run point when Brunson's on the bench. So, again, makes sense to me. Like, I just think there's so many scenarios and so many packages the Knicks have available to them, be it combined with players and picks, that, like, if you can get him, I've now moved into the camp of, like, I think if the Knicks can get him, they should get him. Because I think him, Brunson, I mean, again, the whole thing that we have to wait to see is Randall in the playoffs. Assuming Randall plays well in the playoffs, like him, I mean, Brunson, Mitchell, OG, Randall, let's say Hartenstein, or Mitchell Robinson, doesn't matter. And then like Hart off the bench, you can figure out the bench, right? The bench is whatever. You can figure that out. To me, that's like a contending team. That's like right there. And that is a ton of firepower. I think they're tough to match up with. I don't know. I would roll the dice. I think that's worth it. I think this is like, you're in a point in time where this is clearly kind of what you've been waiting for to be this good. Mm-hmm. And this is what you've been saving your picks for.
Yeah.
I don't know how much more time you can wait, because the Knicks are really good. So their picks don't have a lot of value now, right? Especially not the ones that are like the next year, 2 years, 3 years. You kind of have to strike when you can strike. And if Mitchell's available in the last year of his contract, and let's say he goes to Cleveland's management, he's like, listen, I'm not extending here, and I want to go to New York. So, and I'm going to go to New York. So you can either trade me and get shit for me, or I'll figure out a way to get there. However,
and I don't know. Their insane owner might write like another Comic Sans letter and be like, fuck Donovan Mitchell, I'm not trading you. Like especially if the Knicks spank them again in the playoffs and like, you know, he takes it personally against his manhood because he's like a maniac, you know?
We will win a championship before Donovan Mitchell does.
Look, I'm not going to trade Mitchell. I'm going to start another housing crisis and profit off of it. And you're all going to work for me one day. Like,
yeah.
Dan Gilbert.
I don't know. To me, Embiid just really, I can't do the Embiid thing. He's the
loser. Meniscus.
And you know, forget the
loser. He's an unserious bozo. Yeah. No, he's not it. He's a goofy loser.
He spent too much time with Ben Simmons early in his career.
Yeah, podcasts are boring when you agree with each other, but like I'm with you 100% on Donovan Mitchell. It was not right to do it when they didn't do it. Now it definitely is under the frameworks that you talked about. And you know, Deuce, love him, but he looked like IQ in the playoffs yesterday. he was like he was going to cry a couple times when Davion Mitchell was guarding him. I was like, oh man, this is like
he's got to shoot. He just shoot like he caught a couple of chances to shoot, and he's just like pump fakes, and then he like dribbles the ball out with under like 4 seconds left, and he's like, oh shit, here, Josh Hart.
Like, right? Yeah, they're hitting each other with grenades. Yeah,
and you know all the vets on the team are like, you fucking asshole, man. Are you kidding me right now?
He just looked a little too flustered. I mean, he's young and he hasn't had a lot of minutes and everything, so I'm not gonna say his career's over or whatever.
His career's over. I mean, we can write it off. Another L for Leon Rose.
He's not the backup point guard of the future. Like
no, he has a skill set. His skill set is he can defend the point of attack really well and he can knock down threes. If you're right now, at least if you're like, hey, we need you to run offense, he's like,
yeah. And he's got the most riz, as the kids say.
Yeah, he team. Does.
He's got does style. Have the
most riz. Real good aura. What is it in
his in aura will feed families. I hate the feed families thing, by the way. That's like my boomer slang take of the
what
day.
What is it in Moneyball where they're just sitting around and he's like, he's got a hot girlfriend. What is that? He's like, what the fuck does that mean? that's probably how they were like, all right, should we extend Deuce? Wes is just in the fucking boardroom, and he's like, he's got a fucking hot girlfriend. What? Wes? Yeah. Just extend him. It's fine.
I did not see Wes yesterday, but last year I saw him in the exclusive courtside pregame club and fist bumped him. Yeah, he saw me. Well, he walks in, he points at me. I'm like, wait, who is this guy? And I'm looking at him. And I'm like, oh, it's World Wide West. And then I realized I had like, I'm like covered in head to toe in Knicks gear. And he walks by me and like I fist bump him. And like, I'm still like, I'm like speechless. And then like, he's past me already. And I'm like, thanks for IQ. And he's like, yeah, okay. Like, done here.
See, when you tell that story, you just got to act like Wes knew you.
But it was weird. Like, speaking of, like, I think I had a little bit of an edible that day. This guy walks in and just points at me. I'm like, wait, is that World Wide West pointing at me? Like, what is happening here?
This white guy from fucking Jersey?
Like, yeah, hi. Now I know why you're familiar. It's like I stalk you online and I made an emoji for the Discord of your face.
it's a good emoji. The West emoji is a good one.
Yeah.
So, like, we're 4 years in to the Leon Rose Tibbs thing.
Yeah.
Is this as good as you think it could be at this point in time? Because that's kind of where I'm at, where I'm like, it's not perfect, obviously. There's shit they need to get better at and improve and add talent to. But, like, and have they fucked stuff up? Sure, yeah, they fuck stuff up. Everybody fucks stuff up. But I think if you had told me, like, 4 years ago, I'd have been like, yeah, I'll take that. That sounds great. I'll do that. Is this as good as you would have hoped for it to be? Or yeah, are there things that you're still kind of like, I'm not sure about this, I'm not sure about that?
With Rose, no. I think this is like 99th percentile outcome or whatever. All like the so-called mistakes are the kinds of stuff that just like literally no one can like pick every player perfectly. Like, not everyone hits. That's just like the reality. But like, any reasonable expectation for, you know, how they've built the roster, like he's surpassed. They draft well. They do all the smart nerdy shit that I don't care about when it comes to like cap management. Even like Tibbs, like I would have fired him 2 years ago, but it seems like that wasn't the right time now. Like, I can't complain that like he's still here. And I also am not someone who thinks that like he's his boy and will never fire him. Like, everyone has an expiration date, first of all. Like, he's not going to be the GM forever. Although, you know, inshallah, he's the GM for the rest of my life.
as a devout Muslim, obviously.
Yeah. Ramadan Mubarak, by the way, to everyone out there. Is Ramadan still happening?
I believe so.
Okay. Yes. No, he what was I going to say before I like made like a, it wasn't a racist joke, I promise.
You can trust him.
It's funny for me to wish someone that because I know like nothing about Muslim culture, but I, you know, respect. So if it's him or Thibs, like,
Tibbs, well, I'm not saying, I don't even think it needs to be an answer.
No, I'm just saying, like, at some point, yeah. Like, but also, like, you know, like, these kind of guys, the guy who becomes the number one agent at CAA or, you know, like, is like, he's not the sentimental guy. If he thinks he needs to fire him for the team to take the next step, like, I think he's going to. I guess you could wonder, like, if he knows ball enough to realize that, like, maybe that's the concern. But I'm not like one of these people who's like, Tibbs is his boy. Like, he's never going to fire him. Like, yeah, yes, he will. Like, if he really thinks he needs to, he will. It would just be like, do you think because, you know, you have
the bar. The bar is definitely higher, though, for like, because it's obvious that, and rightfully so, I think he knows Tibbs gives you baseline competence.
Yeah.
He knows that Tibbs is serious and that if you bring in the right personalities to play for him, like your team will be serious. They like, even like our bad year under Tibbs, right? We're in 2021-22. We were 37-45. You know what I mean? Right. Like, we were not like,
that was like a great year for Carmelo Anthony's Knicks, you know? Melo would have demanded they raise his jersey to the rafters like during the 37 win season. He would have been like, come on, I have no help. Look at my bag, it's so deep.
I know who I am at the elbow.
Hooping is so pure.
I love how like he has a podcast now, so he can just talk about all the stupid bullshit that he actually thinks. So he's always just like, this guy is just, he's a bucket, bro. I'm like,
yeah.
Kobe Bryant? Yeah. Like,
and I like that he's still living in the past because it means I can still shit on him and it's not like, it's fair game. Like, because he's still litigating his legacy out there, you know? So I'm like, all right, let's go.
Let's do it.
I'm here to hate on you for as long as you want to do this, Melo.
Oh, can we talk about your biggest current Melo pet peeve?
Current Melo pet peeve?
That he's like obviously angling to get his jersey retired.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I was just kind of referencing it, but like, what a joke. Like, no one has deserved to get their jersey retired less in Knicks history. Like, I'd rather have Herb Williams' jersey retired before Melo's. Like, what did he do here? He got to the second round? Are you kidding me? Like, we should retire Dante's jersey for like being second in the league in three-point shooting for a couple months. Like, what a joke. Like, oh, because you gutted it out to play in an all-star game at home? Like, is that your, like, what we're raising you here? Because you gutted the entire team to come here and threatened to go to the fucking Nets? Kiss my ass, Melo. You bum. You seem like a nice human being, though.
He does seem like well-adjusted. Like,
he seems like a nice guy and a great dad and all these other things and like a good friend.
Maybe not a great husband. Maybe not. Just the one fatal flaw of his.
Lalo's married. I'm not. That is an elite quote. That's the one thing I would consider hanging his jersey in the rafters for.
Well, also the risk it all picture.
And the risk it all picture. Yeah, but they should put him in that like stupid little hall of fame they have, like in like the upper deck somewhere in the garden. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's like really in the nose. It's like if you like wander through a couple of like dark alleyways in the nosebleeds, there's this like weird Knicks Hall of Fame that's like a hallway that has like some pictures and like
Clyde doesn't even know it's up there.
And Clyde's some jerseys of like losers of Melo's caliber who are like, all right, you know, we're not going to retire your jersey, but you're in this little hallway.
So they put like they've got like Allen Houston's.
They've got a picture of the basketball bouncing 9 times off the rim before it went in that Miami game.
he meant to do that. He's like, if I bounce it off the rim enough times, they'll only have 6/10 of a second left. This is perfect.
Shouts to Allen Houston, though. Clearly one of the greatest ballers of all time, as all Knicks fans say.
He's just a
pure right, hooper. Mike Plu.
You know, the thing that people don't get is he's just a bucket. You know,
yeah. Houston, they don't understand that. Yeah,
they don't get it. You can't get that staring at your Excel spreadsheets and looking at your TI-83 calculator. You can only get that by watching grainy YouTube videos.
It is funny because he was like the most sauceless athlete ever. Like, he was such like a straight up and down kind of guy. Like,
if he played today, though, he'd be so much better because they would be like, you need to take like 12 threes a game. What the fuck are you doing? Back in like 98, they were like, all right, so we want you to exclusively post up 16 feet out on the block and we're just going to let you cook. That was it. Yeah. That was our offense. The Knicks offense for like 4 years under Van Gundy was just, it was like Houston, Ewing, LJ, and Sprewell taking turns isolating from the same exact areas of the floor. That's it. Yeah. That's all it was.
Ewing is my ultimate, like, if he played today's game, like, he'd be, like, even so much better. Because he had
Especially before the injuries.
Yeah. You know, yeah. But, like, he would have won any Embiid MVP would have gone to Patrick Ewing. That's for sure. He would have shit all over that loser. But he'd be raining threes.
I mean, a lot of those big guys would be, right? I mean, it's just like the center is actually the one position where I don't think I do think there's some validity to the idea of X player back then couldn't play today. I think there's more nuance within that. Like,
it depends. Yeah.
You don't have the sports science. Those guys didn't grow up with the same amenities. So there's different stuff. But like centers, I'm just like, no, I'm pretty sure like Ewing, Hakeem, Shaq, Dave Robinson, fucking all these guys that were great centers, right, they'd probably be fine in today's league also. Like, I mean, I know it's a tough ask, but I do think that Shaq could handle DeMontis Sabonis. Like, I'm not sure. But I think he'd be able to hold his own there.
I mean, DeMontis's dad, you know, if he came over too, like in his prime, he would have been sick. Like, he could shoot. He was skilled. All these guys, like, yeah, they just weren't allowed to shoot. Like, I'm sure some of them would have also been able to bomb from deep. You're saying different, like with Shaq, like obviously he would just body everyone still. But some of these guys would extend their range, like for sure.
Do you think that Shaq would have extended his range?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like 100% not Shaq.
We need you to space out to the corner here. What? I have a question for you going back to the game. We can probably kind of close with this.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Jalen Brunson, both all-stars, both likely to be all NBA guards. That game is on De'Aaron Fox's home court. Sabonis is another all-star who weirdly has been getting MVP buzz for some reason. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
That's a joke. Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
He scored zero points in the second half, or like three. Like, get out of here.
Yeah. Did you feel like that Brunson played like he had something to prove? And also, like, I mean, was it palpable? I know you were saying you didn't really like follow the actual, you know, box score or whatever,
right? Yeah,
but like, was it palpable watching that game? Like, was it one of those things where you could tell Kings fans were like, please don't, like, this guy is killing us, like, was it obvious he was the best player on the floor? It's kind of like
like, honestly, like, it barely registered that Fox was out there to me. I don't know how many points he scored or whatever, but
he didn't have a good game. He had 20.
He looked outclassed by Brunson, like 100%. And I was like, oh yeah. Every once in a while, you know, like, obviously he's fast as hell. He'd like blow someone by.
Yeah, he's fun. He's a fun player.
Too, he, yeah. you know, he created an advantage. I'd be like, oh, yeah, he's here. But, like, he wasn't. I mean, to me, it was clear that Brunson was the better player. I mean, obviously, a game is a game. It's one game, whatever. But, like, in that game, it wasn't even close. And I think Brunson did look like he had a chip on his shoulder. I think he's looked like that kind of all year, though. Like, it seemed like an extension of that. But, yeah, like, looking at it up close, he definitely – and, you know, I think I saw on Discord you're like, he needs to stop complaining about fouls early or whatever, which is, like, true. That stuff isn't good.
Well, it's
but okay. He did, like – he was getting fouled on, like, every play. Like, he was. And it's, like – and that just goes back to that – I don't like it. Up in the ref shit again, but it was like last year when they told Julius, it's like, well, you can play through the fouls, so they're not fouls. You're like, what? Like, when is it, you know, you just arbitrarily decide if it's affecting me or not? But yeah, so, you know, I think Brunson is annoyed by the fouls. I think he is someone who is never going to say this, but I get the sense that he feels like he doesn't have the, like, respect that some of these guys do, like among, you know, commentators, among fans, among guys who cover the league. Like, I like, because when you look at what he's doing, he's clearly one of the top point guards in the league. But and there's some noise about it this year, but it's not the same as it would be if, you know, it was is that bozo with the guns in Memphis,
John Morant.
You know, if it was John Morant in New York, you know, like, he'd be talked about in a way that, like, Brunson is not being talked about, even though Brunson has earned it.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, and it's like weird to say, and like, Brunson in 2024 is a better player right now this season than Steph Curry. And I think he's been better than guys like Kevin, like a guy like Kevin Durant. And like, I don't know what it takes for, you know, these like voters and stuff like that to kind of adjust their mindsets. But, you know, like, I've seen people talk about, like, oh, like, I mean, Zach Lowe, he's talked about, like, the Lakers are going to have two and the Suns are going to have two All-NBA guys. And it's like, well, why? Like, for, like, if they have two All-NBA guys, shouldn't they be better? And if they're not, then they shouldn't have two fucking All-NBA guys. I don't know. Like, it's just crazy to think, like, you know, last year when we signed Brunson, you're thinking like, all right, the Knicks have like a solid point guard now. You know, maybe he can average, you know, like if he averages like 22, 6 and whatever, that's good for us. Like, and you know, he comes in, he's doing that, he's playing well. But it's like he just keeps like pushing it further and further and further. And it's like at a point, like you just have to stop putting a ceiling on him and just like see where it goes. And it's weird because I just feel like he's the one. I mean, I'm sure everybody feels this way about their players, but like it does feel like in this group of stars in the NBA, he's the one. He seems like this one guy who, at, you know, what is he? He's 27, I think now. Like, who for some reason is constantly discussed only in terms of like what his ceiling is, even though he also is constantly pushed beyond. Yeah. What consensus said his ceiling was at a point in time. Like, you know, last year it was like, well, he's not better than Donovan Mitchell. And it's like, well, why though? Like, he smoked him in the playoffs when he was with Dallas, and then he smoked him again with New York. It's like, maybe he is better. Like, I'm not saying it's necessarily that simple either, but like,
sure.
It's not like some crazy thing. Like, it's not like an idea, like, oh, how could you say that? Like, I don't know. Cause Donovan Mitchell isn't Michael Jordan. Like, is it okay for me to say that?
He might need to change his haircut. He's got that little like bug braids thing going on that I think, you know, I don't know.
He does always look like he smells bad.
He's got hairier shoulders than you might realize too. So that might be it.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. If he had like Josh Hart's Riz, you know, maybe that would be like the.
That could be it. Yeah.
So if Josh was really like a good friend, they would do the face off thing.
Oh, that's a good point. Overrated movie, but good point.
He's just going to do a bunch of blow, and he's going to be like, I want to take his face off.
I have not listened to their podcast yet. I don't really do athlete podcasts much.
I'll watch the clips. I'll listen to the clips. I'm not listening to a full pod of like them talking about Villanova. Right. Oh yeah, dude. So this one time at Villanova, we were lifting weights. Cool. Great.
We had so many antics in our dorm. It was crazy.
Remember that one time we were hanging out with all these groupies? I mean, our friends. I'm married. I'm just kidding. I would never do that. I've been with my girlfriend since high school. Sure, buddy. Whatever you got to tell yourself. Oh, man. Did you get a chance to you didn't what did you do before the game? So you're there before the game, there early. You got a chance to see like some extended workouts and stuff or
No. I was making sure to get as many free drinks and food as possible in like the
You were reviewing the amenities of the Golden
Yes. It was in the one row club is what they call it, only for people who sit courtside. Yeah, and then I was getting a to-go drink and being like, "Come on, the game's about to start. Give me my last to-go drink," because they give it to you in like really nice. Like I was getting old fashioned, and so they give it to you in like a really nice glass. But then like they don't let you take a glass out onto the court. I should have tried to smuggle it. Like, we've had to stop the game. Someone's dropped a glass onto the court. It's shattered. And Jalen Brunson has like his Achilles by accident.
Did you see that kid that threw the plastic ball or something on the court?
Yeah, he was like four chairs down from me. I started booing him. His parents were like, "What are you doing?"
Wait, were you actually?
Yeah. He was literally like four seats down from me, or like five seats down from me, because they were handing out all these balls, and like there were a bunch of kids in the first row for some reason, which is a real waste. I wouldn't take my daughter to these seats; she wouldn't appreciate it. And yeah, like the game started, and he immediately just chucked it onto the court. And I thought I was being humorous, and I was like, "Boo!"
The kid started crying. They showed it on TV. He was like crying.
Wait, what, did he really?
Yes. So you made this kid cry. Are you kidding me?
No, that wasn't me. It was someone else.
I know. I didn't boo him. I was kidding. It was a joke. It's a joke. It's a joke. Come on. Oh, man. All right. James.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your you being our correspondent. From Sacramento. Did you guys spend the night in Sacramento?
No. One of the good things about your wife being pregnant is that she's a default designated driver. So we just came right back. About an hour and 20 minutes. Oh, she was really happy with me. I tried to turn the TV off last night by unplugging it. She's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm turning the TV off." So that's where I was by the time we got home.
You got a couple roadies for you?
I was drinking right up until the buzzer. I'll put it that way.
So you remember the game vividly.
Oh, yeah. When I was watching the replay of Malik Monk barreling into me this morning, I was like, "Oh, he really did like fall on me." Like, I thought like he was kind of like right next to me, but he was like, he went right at me, and I had to like shove him off.
Oh, man. All right, James. Time. Appreciate your time. Let people know they can find you and plug anything that you'd like to plug.
You guys should all be paying full price for NBA 2K. I know it's on sale, but if I were you, I would look for a version that gives you extra VC. Spend a couple hundred bucks. Make a couple builds. And I'm the Irishman on Twitter. That's it.
Yep. Definitely worth mentioning that on the oft rare occasions that James does tweet, it's definitely worth it to give him a follow. Aside from that, I have nothing to plug. I'm just going to plug all the words again. If you have not watched this game yet for some fucking reason, definitely watch it. If you already have, rewatch it. I don't know. Worth your time. Hell of a game. Knicks play Golden State tomorrow, Monday. That game is on ESPN. It's a national game again. If the Knicks can win that'd be great. They'd seal a winning record on this road trip. They put them at 3-0. Then they have the Nuggets on Thursday. So, again, I have nothing to plug, so I'll just plug the work at Strickland. Thank you again to our sponsors, both BetOnline and Cut. That's our show for today. I hope everybody has a great week, and I will see you on Friday.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.